Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Silas in the studio producing the show. We got Brody at your new house in Dallas, I'm assuming, right? Is that where you're at right now?
Yeah. We're all moved in Dallas, Texas, baby. We're back.
Heck yeah. So tell me a little bit about this house. I saw the tweet, lots of room for activities, allegedly, in the backyard, you were saying. What does that even mean?
Okay, so house hunting is very difficult. Kelsey absolutely crushed it. I don't know how long it actually took to find the house, but right now the market, for those that are in the housing industry, know how crazy the market is right now, of where you would just show up to a house. I don't know, let's just say $100,000 is like the true value for the house, right? And so the people that are selling the house are like, oh, I bet we can get 150 for this.
Yeah.
They market up to 150, and then someone walks in, they go, I love this house, we'll offer 175. And you're just like, well, so that was happening a lot. There was multiple houses that we really liked a lot, but
just getting outbid.
I was like, I don't want to buy a house and then, you know, a year later it'd be way undervalued than it. So Kelsey, I think, did a great job finding this one. The backyard, I'll probably have to do like an Instagram video or something eventually in the backyard.
Yeah.
But we have a patio, a covered patio that I can get like 40 feet.
Oh, heck yeah.
40 feet one direction. And then there's another direction that I can go to like 30. But it's like, I don't know, it's got to be like 50 by 30 patio. I mean, it's a massive covered patio. So I just got done practice putting out there. That's incredible. And then I've got like a little technical wooded hole in my backyard.
No way.
So I want to say it's probably like 150 feet and then maybe like long and then wide, probably like close to another 150 feet.
Okay.
And diagonal, probably close to like 200 maybe. And there's tons of little trees, so I can like set up a bunch of like scramble shots.
Nice.
In the backyard there. And then if we want to get real freaky, you can throw one from like the side backyard to the front yard and have like almost a 300-foot straight shot.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm going to work my matter and set up like a little training facility probably.
We're going to have to set up
once the off-season goes.
Yeah, we'll have to set up like a mini course. Well, like actual full-size basket, but like a mini course with a bunch of tees to one basket and have like a backyard championship every year.
Yeah, have like a little technical thing. It should be good times. But yeah, no, back. I got my first round in.
I saw you're playing with the Easy Three guys.
Back with the Easy Three guys. Yeah, Phil and Sean, you know them very well. They laid the smackdown on you guys pretty good.
Unfortunately, they did.
They did tell me that they were surprised by how good you guys were.
As they beat us?
Well, I think they were just saying, like, you know, how it is in YouTube. A lot of times we just show up. We're not warming up. We're not practicing. We kind of just throw ourselves in these YouTube videos. And so are you really always putting out your best performance? Probably not. But, it was great playing with those guys. They made a fun little, like, gold layout on one of the local courses here. So it was fun to kind of play that. And it feels good to be back in Texas. Obviously, Kelsey's super excited to be back close to her family.
Yeah.
And things are bueno.
Bueno. Now you're talking about practice putting. We gotta talk OTB. Obviously, you texted Trevor and I, and you also tweeted about your putting performance out there and how you felt like that was what was really holding you back. Which, if you rewind us a year ago this time, I feel like your putt was like what you had. And you're like, man, if I could just get close to the basket. So what's going on right now? What are you working through?
So I think after thinking about it, I think ultimately happened was after DDO, with all the wind it had, you had to putt differently to be successful.
Mm,
so if you were not a spin putter at DDO, you probably struggled really, really badly.
Mm.
So I changed my putt to purely almost a spin putt at DDO.
Gotcha.
And I feel like I just maybe have never gotten it back. Today and yesterday putting felt great. Feels good. So it feels like it's like my kind of rhythm's coming back. But putting one of those things where if you are nervous about it or feel like, I don't know, man, like it makes it more difficult.
Oh, yeah.
And the basket never looks this week, unfortunately, or last weekend. The basket looks so tiny. You know, 15 footers, I'm stepping up to being like shaky over.
Yeah.
And it was hard. It was really, really hard on a course like that too, where when you do throw shots in the circle for whether it be for par or for birdie, you obviously need to capitalize on it. Because a course like that, the birdies are out there for sure, but they don't come easy. You have to throw good shots to make birdies out there, and you want to capitalize when you did it. And I tweeted about like, it was like 13 missed circle one putts.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't a situation where it was like, oh man, I just kept throwing it beat. These are putts like inside of 25 to 50. And those hurt. Hurt really, really bad. And there was a couple times where one hole I had a 20-footer hit cage roll down the hill into the water. So jeez. that cost me two strokes. And then 18 hole round two, I had a 25-footer for birdie, airballed that, clanked the 20-footer comebacker, and tapped in for bogey. So that cost me two strokes. So there's like, there's four strokes right there where it's like, you just make the putt and you move on. And
yeah,
it was with how good I was throwing the disc. It's been tough because I've been throwing the disc well enough to get myself in the top 10, but the putt is just absolutely atrocious right now. And like I said, I think I beat five people. There was like 107, 108 people in the field. And the bottom of, what we've seen so far in California is not as many touring professionals are going to these California events. So you still have the top half very competitive and extremely deep. But the bottom half of the fields at these events are pretty weak, mostly local people. And so when you're 103rd out of 108, C1X putting, and you've got 40 people at the bottom that are shooting 30, 20 over par for the tournament, and those are the only people you're beating.
Yeah,
it's a tough pill to swallow. So if it felt like an opportunity was lost because that course, I loved that course.
Yeah,
and we can talk about it a little bit after the tournament. I don't know how much in depth you guys have gone with the course design on it, but. But for being on a golf course, it was a pretty gosh darn good course.
Yeah, I mean, we talked through it a little bit on Grip Lock, not too much like specifically about the course design, but more so it felt like you were watching a golf course because you were, but it didn't in a lot of ways. The shots that you guys were throwing and like the shots we were watching y'all throw didn't feel like we were watching a golf course, if that makes sense. So I thought they did a great job in that aspect. And I put a poll out on Twitter cause I saw some people complaining about it. It seems that the number one complaint, which was fair, but it's not really the course designer's fault, was just that on coverage, it was at times tough to know where you were going. Like it was tough cause you couldn't exactly like see the basket down the fairway or like you're landing in a fairway. So it's tough to know if you're going straight or going across or stuff like that. And that seemed to be the only real complaint, but.
Well, yeah, and to that point, one of the reasons why it didn't feel like we were on a golf course was because very few times, if any, we were ever throwing down a fairway.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
So we were throwing across fairways. So I can definitely see how that can be very difficult to see. And here's what I will say, and this will always be a topic of debate on whether you like it or not. And I think this actually helps viewers at home visualize the hole is we're not going to be able to go like OTB is not going to be able to go to that golf course. And, the course designer, Sean, is not going to be able to say like, hey, we are going to control the grass length at this golf course.
Yeah, that's never going to happen.
So the only way for them to really give the, you know, the viewers at home a good idea of the whole shape is for there to be like flags or poles or some sort of something lining the kind of the intended fairway.
Yeah.
And I will say, talking about out of bounds, I think not out of bounds. I think this course needed lots of hazard.
Mm.
It's a penalty. It's a tool that is often never used, but for a course like this, I think hazard is really what it needed, because there are several holes where there is a very aggressive shot that can, you know, whether it be a roller or a huge like sky Annie flex shot that you can get massive distance on. And if you get your angle off or anything like that, you're not really too worried because you're still going to be really far out there and you'll just figure it out once you get up to your disc.
Yeah.
I think this is where hazard could have been really useful to, one, identify the intended fairways that they wanted you to take. And so people watching at home would be like, oh, okay, I can see, you know, the fairway and where they need to go. Then also, if you do want to get aggressive and you do want to throw a roller, like hole five, for example, the par five, that's like 1,000 feet and you kind of cross three holes. So you go across three different fairways.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are going roller on their second shot. Some people are even going roller on their first shot. There, I love hazard.
Yeah.
That's like, let's just say like 100 feet wide, 150 feet wide. And that way, if you do want to get aggressive and your roller ends up flipping too much and just starts sailing down the fairway, you don't bring it all the way back into the fairway and throw your third shot there.
Mm.
You throw your third shot from way, 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 way far away.
I got you.
I think that eliminates a lot of these kind of throws that, you know, ultimately a lot of people don't like seeing, where it's just doing it as far as you can and there's no real risk. And also that will give an advantage to the guy that can throw 450 feet consistently and accurately versus the person that can only throw 400 feet, but can throw a 600 foot roller. And they're just launching rollers on these holes.
Yeah.
Because they
can. So you're almost advocating for on this course in particular, instead of OB on some holes, having hazard and not necessarily adding hazard. Yes. Correct. Yeah. I definitely think that's something. That's something that
because I want to punish people. Like, obviously if you miss the fairway, right?
And
you don't land, let's say it's 200 feet wide. If you can't throw a 450 foot shot into a 100 foot wide spot, that was a bad shot, right?
Yeah.
And you should get penalized. So if you miss by 5 feet, you should get penalized. Now, should you get penalized just as much as the person that misses by 250 feet? That's why I like hazard, because the person that misses by 5 feet, you're still pretty close to the fairway, the intended line. So you still should have some sort of shot into green for your second, or if it's a par five, you still be able to, should get up the fairway. But if you throw a roller that just doesn't work and you go way down, like you are now should be scrambling and having to throw a really, really hard next shot way down there versus you and the guy that missed by 5 feet are throwing from the same exact spot.
Same shot. Yeah, that's something I haven't really thought about. I've definitely thought through like the usage of hazard on golf courses, but more so like they've used them on bunkers and stuff like that, or like certain areas. But definitely on golf courses, I think specifically, it makes a lot of sense on a way to kind of make them slightly more difficult and eliminate some of that just, you know, spray and pray, chuck it as far as you can aspect, because then you do have to worry not just about going OB, but how far you're going OB. And that's definitely something that on a golf course could change the way everything plays.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit too, if we want to get into a little bit on, like, I love talking about the last stretch of holes on these courses, because I'm starting to see the trend that we all want, where it's like the last stretch of holes aren't just gimmies.
Yeah.
So if you have a one shot, two shot lead, you're not just like, oh, well, that person's going to win.
Yeah, it's over.
And this course had a lot of teeth starting on hole 15, going hole 16, that was kind of one of the worst holes on the course, to be fair. But hole 15, incredible hole. Hole 17, incredible hole. Hole 18, incredible hole. And I don't know how familiar – do you remember the course pretty well, I guess?
Or do you semi-well, like, yeah. Exact holes, I don't fully know.
So hole 17 is the one with all the water, peninsula, green.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So like that hole, for example, I think to make that hole incredible, you make a hazard left. So where the basket is, right, up there on that little peninsula, there's a huge landing area all left there.
Yeah.
Right? You make all of that hazard pretty much. Mm. And you almost make it like an island green, if you will. And again, it's a hazard, so you don't have to have like all this weird stuff of like, where do you go for a drop zone? Because then I hate drop zones on par fours, right?
Yeah.
So you just continue to play where your shot ends up. That kind of eliminates all this like OB kind of island stuff. But you make all that, you figure out how big you want the green it to be, and then you make everything else hazard. Mm. Because what some people were doing is they were playing that hole just for a par. And if you're playing that hole for a par, it wasn't very difficult. You would just throw your tee shot out somewhere. Then you just chuck a hyzer anywhere out into that huge landing zone.
Yeah.
And then you throw like a little 150-foot shot, upshot, and then you tap in for par and move. The people that are going for birdies, those were the only people that really actually took big numbers. Mm. Because they would throw the big second shot hyzer out over the water.
Yeah.
And it would never come back in. And so now they're almost left with the same exact shot, right? And so that's where I think the hazard play there, that would almost initiate the initiate people being aggressive. Like you have to be.
It makes you challenge the water. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't really give you another option.
Because I didn't get to see it, but I saw, like, I didn't watch coverage, but I kind of was paying attention a little bit. I'm assuming Natalie went for it first and threw it in the water. And then did Paige just throw a shot kind of to the landing zone that I'm talking about?
I believe she knew that. I believe that was the order it happened. Natalie definitely went aggressive, and that's what ended up costing her. But, you know, it's hard to blame a player for losing a tournament by trying to win it versus just...
No. What I'm saying, though,
yeah,
is like...
That, the commentators were doing that. The commentators were saying, that's the wrong play, you know, got to think, just take a four there and put the pressure on Paige. But I'm like, I like a player losing trying to win versus a player losing trying not to lose. So, that's what ended up happening. She went aggressive for the green and ended up in that water.
Yeah, and that's where I think if you make the hazard, Paige now doesn't just have like the easy, like, I'm just going to chip and make a par.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She's forced to actually have to
play some golf.
Throw a shot into that hole 17. And then hole 18 was an incredible finishing hole. Such a good hole.
Yeah.
Like probably one of the better holes we've played on tour this year.
Oh, wow. That's high praise. Nice. Yeah. I mean, it came across like it definitely made it exciting. Like even for MPO, I mean, for FPO, obviously it came down to the wire when you thought it was going to be a blowout. And then for MPO towards the end, it gotten to where if you felt like there was no way Simon should lose, but there was still enough there wasn't a big enough gap that you were like 100% comfortable ever. Because there were still enough holes ahead until we were like on 18 with, I think he had like close to a 4-stroke lead at that point. Until we were there, it didn't feel comfortable because you knew you're like two mistakes away and it's right back to tied.
I would say you would need 3 strokes on 18 to.
Yeah.
2 strokes is not enough because it's very easy to bogey that. Like even if you're trying to play that whole par, it's not easy. Which I think is what makes it an awesome hole. And that's the only reason I was saying 17 is if you play 17 for par, it's a pretty easy hole.
Yeah.
But 18 is anything but that. Mm. So, you know, two shots, you could easily bogey that hole. And then the person you're going up against birdie it. And all of a sudden you're in a playoff.
And I think the person above us literally just absolutely wiped out. But before we get into our next topic, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for today's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Manscaped. Sweaty sack summer is approaching, and it's time for you to prioritize the comfort of your crotch. That's why the Kings of Crotch Comfort Manscaped have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer briefs out there. I've had the honor of testing these out personally, and I can say it's some of the softest fabric I've ever had in underwear. It's breathable, just like gills for your groin, as they put it. They even trademarked the jewel pouch, so you know it's serious. It's time for you to invest in your family jewels, so let your bulge breathe and get 20% off plus free shipping using the code DEBATE20 over at manscaped.com. Now, you've heard us talk about on Grip Locked and some on this show, the Lawnmower 4.0, the best electric trimmer for below-the-waist grooming by far. It offers skin-safe technology. But with their focused efforts now on helping you out with these new boxer briefs, especially the focus on the jewel pouch here, a pouch designed to cradle your boys in their own special space, lined with perforated performance fabric. That's some alliteration, it's hard to say, to keep them well ventilated. Basically, just imagine your balls sipping pina coladas, chilling on a hammock at some tropical beach, and that's all you need to know. The micromodal fabric is buttery soft and breathable, keeping your cucumber cool. Walk, run, strut, these moisture wicking boxers breathe without breaking a sweat. So go over to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with the code DEBATE20. Again, that's 20% off and free shipping with the code DEBATE20 at manscaped.com.
I'm gonna need some of those. What the heck?
Like, they sent us a bunch, but you weren't here, man. You weren't here. So what? Trevor and I have been rocking them. Yeah. Well, Trevor has them in his drawer, actually. He has your drawers in his drawer. So sorry.
All right. Well, you need to hit our contact and have them send me some down here.
I'll get some. Yeah.
Let me tell you something. It is getting swampy.
It's as Manscaped would put, sweaty sack summer down there.
The triple S.
The triple S will get you every time. So, you know what? If Trevor's already been using them, maybe you need to head over to Manscaped, code DEBATE20, just pick some up.
All right, maybe I will indeed. I am in need.
I actually want to talk a little bit about like you were just talking about the final three holes. Before then, Silas, I gotta quiz you real quick on what? I don't know if you've seen this, Brody. Our man Silas here has picked up disc dying, and he's gotten good fast. And I feel like a lot of people at home are very curious in disc dying, and I personally just want to know, what method are you going with? What are we looking at here? What are we talking?
What method?
Well, like, how have you gotten to this point so quick?
Okay. Well, YouTube has been a big help with that.
That's fair.
I will say. There's a lot of people on YouTube that know what they're doing. And you know, just having the right tools for the right job.
Now, did you cover any of this in Plastic Addict, your show?
Yes, I did.
So
I did.
You can check that out if you want to actually see. You actually dyed discs for the episode, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I think, it's like a 25-minute video.
Oh heck yeah! There you go. And then you went live on Foundation Disc Store today.
Foundation Disc Store went live. Dyed several, like 7 discs. All on the live stream.
Heck,
you know,
yeah.
I had people picking colors. I had people picking designs.
Look at this guy.
It was fun. It was a good time.
There you go.
It was a great time.
Yeah, we put some on the shelves in our in-person store. I don't know. I just wanted to give a shout-out because Silas has gotten very good at dyeing discs very fast, and I'm jealous because it's something I always wanted to do, and I never got good at it. So he hit me up with a sick Zeus. I think he has a zone for you, Brody, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
I gave him a zone to do for me. When is Silas gonna have these on
online?
Yeah,
I gotta build up some stock.
We actually just placed a order that included blank discs for dying in the order.
Yeah, Brad was telling me about that.
Yeah, so we got a stack of like 15 or 20 that are going straight to Silas, and those will probably be the first ones that hit the site. So
heck yeah.
Do you have a dying name yet?
No,
Psy Guy Dies.
Psy Guy. Dude, there we go.
Psy Guy Dies. Boom. That's just what happens.
Are you posting these on your Twitter at all, Silas?
No, I should.
You need to.
I need to.
People love these things. I shouted you out on my Twitter.
I saw that.
It was sick.
I saw that. All right. I'll post them. I'm doing one for Trevor.
You post cancelable tweets, but you don't even post.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Honestly. Here.
You post controversial tweets left and right. You don't even post your sick disc dies. What people actually see.
Hey, man.
Yeah, like... stuff that actually would probably do very well.
You get interviews on Trevor's show canceled, and then you won't post a disc die?
What?
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Don't worry about it. I want to talk back to the final three-hole stretch of OTB Open in a roundabout way, because there's another three holes that went down in a different sport, golf. I'm assuming you watched the playoff, the PGA Championship.
No, I was playing.
Oh, you're playing. But you haven't seen it? You haven't seen it or anything?
I was on hole 15.
Oh, well, that sucks. I was watching it.
Well, there was a huge backup during it. So we're literally on hole 15 had one of the bigger backups just because of the way the court, the hole was set up.
Yeah.
But I'm like on my phone, like trying to refresh to see what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
Because again, like at that point in time, my round had, you know, it was pretty brutal out there.
So it was,
I had some free time on my hands.
Yeah, it was a pretty thrilling finish. I was watching disc golf on the TV and then was watching golf on my phone, but my eyes were glued to golf because they were in a playoff. So no offense to disc golf, but it was a little more interesting.
That guy was just, he couldn't handle the pressure.
The guy that lost? What was his name?
No, not the guy in the playoff.
No, the one that didn't make the playoff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because all he had to do Miko. Was par. All he had to do par. Was par bogey. 18. Bogey it got him in the playoff. Yeah, ended up doubling. But they had an aggregate playoff, which I think we had talked about a while ago, but I finally got to witness it.
Yeah, it's the only major that does aggregate. The other three majors, US Open does, you come back the next day and play all 18 holes again.
Yeah, that's what Trevor. Well, I thought Trevor said they just got rid of that. I don't know. Either way, Trevor's telling me about that.
Did they?
I don't know. I could be completely wrong, but Trevor's just telling me about that.
Oh, and then I think the other two are sudden death.
Yeah, because essentially what ended up happening in this one is they both birdied one. Justin Thomas birdied two, and then so he had a one-stroke lead going into the final three, which I think they end up doing 16, 17, 18, I believe.
No, 13.
13. They finished on 18. 13, 17, 18. 18. Yeah, so they picked the three.
Someone said, yeah, they got rid of it.
They did get rid of the 18 hole. So fascinating.
So are all three just sudden deaths now, Silas?
Minus the aggregate. I would assume. I mean, Silas doesn't know. If the chat tells him.
He can do some research real quick. He's got a computer that knows every answer in front of him.
All right, I can hear him typing. He's typing.
Yeah.
Dang, he's typing fast.
Is he actually typing?
No, he didn't type a word. He was just faking it. I'll type for you, Brody. I got this.
US Open playoff.
Someone said it's a two-hole aggregate.
I just Googled it. Two-hole aggregate. So low score after two holes. Two or more players are still tied. After those two holes, it goes to sudden death. So same thing that we just witnessed, but two holes instead of three holes. Anyways, whole reason I brought this up is because it was absolutely thrilling. And the three holes they chose were what made it thrilling. Because like 17 was a drivable par four. And then Justin stepped up first, put it on the green. Who was the other guy in the playoff?
Zalatoris.
Will, he swung it a little wide right. He ended up basically like...
Swung it a little wide.
That's a disc golf term brought to golf. You're welcome. Swung it wide right and ended up basically almost OB. I don't know. It was just thrilling. It was thrilling. And I was thinking, though, is this something that would make any specific disc golf tournament more exciting? And if so, which one?
Worlds.
Well, the only thing that I was thinking was the issue is you need a course that it sets up well for. And with rotating courses, if you have like, I mean, I guess it's still going to make it exciting in general, even if it's a course it doesn't. Because like you could do USDGC, you could do some type
Worlds,
of loop.
You could literally do 16, 17, 18.
Well, but like you don't know the course.
Well, at the four, I'm talking about
yeah,
the four.
Yeah. So I guess you can decide based on the course.
Three holes.
Yeah, but you want it to be like holes. Somewhat of a, easy to get to from 18 and a good little
13
bit of
loop. Was 13 to 17 a little bit of a, like, how long was that between those two holes when you're watching?
Well, they hopped them on golf carts. So, I mean, we had one commercial break and we were back.
They basically told the spectators, you better run if you want to see this playoff.
Probably. Because in my head, I immediately went to USDGC just because it's always at the same course. So it's easy for me to just think through. And I was thinking, like, It would be a walk, but if you did like
easy.
5, 17, 18.
5, 17, 18, yeah.
Yeah, the walk to 5 would be a little long for spectators, and then the walk up to 17 would be a little long, but you go 5, 17, 18 and see where you're at, and like, that's thrilling.
But realistically, you can watch 5 from 17, 18.
That's true. You could have the spectators on the hillside of 18, and they'd be able to watch 5.
Yeah, they just watch it from there.
That's true. That's a perfect spot, yeah. Because that would be so thrilling, because like, the playoff right now, the format is you go back to 18, then you go to 1, 17, 18 loop, but it's just sudden death. And so 18, it's a tough hole.
No, they did one. They did one year.
He didn't go back to they didn't go back to 18 first. They go straight to one.
No, they just,
oh, that's old. Just, then
remember
2014,
remember
they went back to 18.
Straight to one, and Kyle like missed the gap and
yeah.
laid up. And
I know that was I knew that was where it ended, but the old it must have been. I'm thinking when Johnny McRae, Will Shushuk, 2014, they went back mm-hmm. to 18, then one. But regardless, it's that loop there.
I like 5, 17, 18. That's
yeah.
a great loop.
I think
that's
that'd be pretty thrilling to go to aggregate, because then you're guaranteed three holes of golf. If you know, we go back, Paul and Kyle, they go into a playoff and Paul loses one on 5 and then gains 2 on 17. And now he's up 1 going into 18. It's just like the same thing that you just witnessed during the round of like everyone's got to make clutch plays. And if it doesn't happen, then you go to the sudden death. I don't know. It made the playoff. For that major, it was a major, right? The PGA Championship? Yeah.
PGA.
It made that playoff for the major, I think, in my opinion, way more interesting. Because it even when it like it would have been over on the second hole in, when a normal sudden death, but like you still had the pressure of like, it's not over. He's still got to execute 18, which is what the guy just lost the tournament on just a few, like, you know, 20 minutes before that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if the other majors don't. Like, I definitely see more tournaments going towards that than a sudden death, because it's like you just played 72 holes.
Yeah.
And after 72 holes, you tied, and now you're just going to. Now, obviously, the drama and all that stuff, I get it from one hole. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But as far as like fairness of like trying to give it to the best person, you know, 3 probably makes a little bit more sense than 1.
Yeah, or even
kind of fluky.
Yeah, even U.S. Open going to 2 is interesting, because it at least guarantees you got 2 holes, because like it just makes you execute more shots essentially, and you're guaranteed you're gonna have to execute X amount of shots, probably 2 par 4s, I would imagine. But
that's my whole argument on why I don't think par 3 courses should be on the Pro Tour.
You just have to execute more shots.
Yeah, you don't have to execute that many shots throwing a, you know,
all par threes,
tee shot, and all par threes.
Yeah. All right. Now, we're going to go into a new segment, our first segment on debate night. Brody doesn't even know what this is about to be. I'm about to introduce it. But during this segment, I want you to go ahead and start throwing in some potential debate topics, potential things you want us to talk about into the chat. If you're watching us live, if you're listening on audio, just sit back and relax. Unless you're driving a car, then stay focused on that road. But go ahead and throw some comments in the chat of what you want us to talk about here. Silas will be monitoring the chat. I decided our hot dog pretzel debate was pretty popular. Some people were very invested in that. And it was a very pointless debate. And so I decided, you know, we're debate night. We don't really debate that much anymore at this point. So I'm going to bring up a pointless debate of the week. And I'm going to just find a pointless debate online and bring it up and just see. I'm going to pick ones that I think we'll disagree on, and then we'll just see where we're at. And, you know, sometimes they'll be disc golf related if there is something to debate on. And if not, like this week, it's just going to be pointless. So this pointless debate of the week, first time, new segment, which is better? We can also say, which would you prefer, being really tall or really short?
Okay.
That's a tough
Kelsey
one.
Kelsey literally at Best Buy today was standing on like the footrest of the chair. So she went from, you know, she went up to like 5'11", I mm-hmm. think. And she's like, I wish I was this tall. And I was like, No, you don't.
So is your argument really short?
Hold on. Okay, wait. We got a first. Figure out parameters.
I think
what is really short.
Yeah, I figured you'd go here. So
what,
I'm thinking 5 foot and 7 foot. I think is the really tall,
wait,
really short. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking really short and really tall. I'm thinking pretty drastic.
No, but you gotta. Yeah, but you gotta. I mean, that makes it way easier, because you gotta be like, I feel like you gotta be realistic. Like really
short. It's short.
That's what I'm saying. I'd rather be 5 foot.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
See, I think it's harder when you go like 5'6" or 6'4". I think that gets harder.
Okay. Okay, we'll go there. 5'6", 6'4".
Because 5'7", like...
So basically, I'm talking to two guys that are... Y'all are both 6'4" or higher. or taller, higher. Yeah. We'll go with higher. And I'm not. I'm only 5 feet clear of 5 foot six, or 5 inches clear of 5 foot six. So I still think
are
I'm choosing claiming, 5 foot
are
six.
You are 6'1"?
No, I'm 5 inches clear of 5 foot six. That'd be 5'11".
You're 5'11"?
I'm like 5'10 and a half.
What math did I just do?
I don't know. You added seven. You added or eight. I don't know. What? I'm not over 6 foot. I guarantee you that.
It was five six, you said?
5 foot six or 6 foot four. What are you choosing? Because here's my thing.
I think I'm going 6 foot four.
If you're tall, you do get like you can always reach the top shelf. Yeah. You can always like at a grocery store, you don't need assistance. You know,
but like
yada,
being
yada, yada.
On an airplane sucks.
But exactly, airplanes.
Being in a car,
cars,
like small cars.
You can
sucks.
Be if you're short, like, you can be comfortable on every couch.
Showers.
Yeah, that's
showers,
what I'm thinking. It's like
finding.
I think
finding
I'd rather be 5 foot
shoes.
Six. I think I'd rather be a here's short king.
Here's the only thing I'll say is, if you're 5'6", you probably do eliminate a little. Like, there's less women out there that probably are like, I don't want to date a tall person versus I don't want to date a short person, right? Like there's way more women are fine with dating someone that's 6'4" versus women. There's a lot of women that are like, I don't want to date anyone shorter than me.
That's so just a risk I have to take.
That's
comfort.
A good point.
I feel like you eliminate your pool when you are shorter, but outside of that,
I don't know. Short kings are making a comeback.
I'm saying what? There are some women that are like, there are some women
Cody
that want
to
wear heels.
To the kingdom, man.
But there are some women that want to wear heels. So if you're 5'6" and your girlfriend's 5'7", it's going to be tough for her to wear heels.
I'll wear platform shoes.
I'm saying outside of that, I can't think of another reason why like being 5'6" is like unbeneficial.
Well, the only other thing is like you have no chance in athletics, really.
Yeah.
Well, we're running, we're, basketball,
no, I mean, you
stuff
could be
like that.
Gymnastics.
Yeah, you could run gymnastics. There's options, but you're limiting yourself in that aspect of life.
Curling,
you'd be worse
be
at
nasty.
Disc golf. If you're 5'6", you would be worse at disc golf.
I don't know about that.
I think so. Wouldn't be able to throw nearly
probably,
as far.
Yeah, probably.
And plus, 5'6", you probably have smaller hands. Wouldn't be able to putt as well. Wouldn't have as much control on the disc.
I don't know about that.
Something to think about.
I mean, Shaq had some of the biggest hands, and he said his hands were too big.
That's basketball, though. Basketball. That's basketball. We're talking disc golf.
You think the bigger your hand is, the better it is?
I think in disc golf, you have more control.
Maybe with an Ultrastar, but now with these little things, these are little dinner plates.
But like you can grab a 13 speed. You can grab a 13 speed and just be like, "Oh, this is great." I grab a 13 speed, I'm like, "I can't hold this thing." And then putting,
really?
Like the yeah, it's well, a nuke is like borderline. It's almost too. It's like a little too big for me to be uncomfortable. Like
for
it's just
what?
A little too thick. It just doesn't feel good in my hand. It's too like my hand wrapping around it is like too thick.
I just don't think you're used to it. I don't think you're used to it.
Well, sure, but your hands are also massive compared to mine.
Do you power grip everything?
I power grip it. Well, everything but my putters. I fan grip all my putters.
Hmm.
What do you think, Silas? I mean, Silas has big hands. I can't ask him.
What?
Yeah, but
you
when
throw
I,
a nuke?
When I
when, would you throw a nuke
when
if
you
it feels comfortable?
If I could throw one, if I could get one up to
but like,
speed.
The comfort isn't what's holding you back.
No.
Yeah.
It feels good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think my smaller hands.
But like when I power grip a Avenger SS, that I don't feel like I don't feel anything differently.
No, because you're power gripping small. SS. That's what I'm saying. That's your advantage.
Yeah,
no, but like
I see
golf,
the bigger the hands, like it's an advantage.
In disc golf, I think.
In disc golf, yes.
I just don't think the rim width translates like that to your argument should have stayed on putting. Because putting, I don't know. But your argument with rim width and throwing,
well, that's
I don't
just,
believe.
That's a comfort thing. It's uncomfortable for people with small hands to hold a 13-plus speed.
But it should be the same as someone with big hands. It should be uncomfortable to hold a really small rim disc.
No.
How does that not work? What? Like when I grip, if I grip your golf clubs,
yeah,
it feels uncomfortable because my hands, the size of my hands,
golf clubs. How are your golf clubs different?
They're way thicker. The grips are way thicker. Yeah, they're 2.5.
Hmm.
So like when I, if you grip my golf clubs, it would feel like, wow, this feels like a tree, like a tree. And when I grip your golf clubs, it feels like I'm gripping a pencil.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So in golf, there is that translation of like you gripping, you have smaller hands gripping a bigger rim. It feels weird. Someone with big hands gripping a smaller rim, it feels weird. So why would that not translate the same to disc golf?
Well,
where
like
someone with small hands,
I think because the smaller the rim, the deeper the inside is.
No, Avengers is so shallow
compared to what?
A nuke deeper.
You think a nuke's deeper than Avenger SS?
Yes.
That can't be true.
What?
That can't
yes.
be true. There's no way.
It probably is.
I'm looking up the specifications. That has to be.
Look up like an Undertaker. Undertaker super shallow too. Raptor. Raptor's super shallow.
Raptor.
Well,
for sure.
Well, some Raptors. Some Raptors can have dome to them. What's the chat saying, Silas? Am I crazy?
I don't know how it goes one way, but doesn't go the other.
Everyone's just talking about how tall Drew Gibson is.
Oh, dude, your thumbnail made him look tiny. Did you edit him or something?
I don't know.
how tall is he?
That was ruthless.
How tall is he?
I would guess
5'10".
I
think he's like my height.
Hunter, you know what I was thinking about though today?
What?
And I think this is something. Oh man, it is coming down.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this because like so many people in these comments are like saying stuff where I'm just like, how are people not knowing this? When you're watching coverage on disc golf, a lot of times that's like the only time you really ever get to see some of these pros. And the way they have coverage set up, a lot of times like it's very zoomed in and just the perspective of everything. You know, there's very every few times where you just see a player like walking, like players next to each other, just like walking down a fairway.
Yeah.
Because what ends up happening is, and I was thinking about this because when I was watching the PGA Championship, they have cameras all over the course. And the majority of time when they're filming someone, they're filming them from hundreds of yards away and they're just zoomed in.
Yeah.
Right. And so like the perspective I think is a lot different than in disc golf. The person that's filming you is 5 feet away from you. And they're just like, boom, right there.
Mm.
So I just thought that was interesting because I was like, I thought a lot of new, like me, Ezra, and AB are all very tall. And Drew's like a normal height. Drew's like 5'10".
Yeah, I knew you and AB were tall. Ezra, I didn't feel like he was tall, but I think it's because I've only ever been around Ezra when I'm around you. So
he's like 6'2".
Yeah, so he has me by like 3 or 4 inches, 3 inches. But like I just don't notice because if you're in the room and you're towering over him, it makes it hard for him to feel tall to me. So then when there's a thumbnail and Drew's in it, I was like, I literally told Trevor, I was like, surely this was Photoshopped. And I've seen Drew in person. Like Drew's not a short guy. Like I think Drew and I are about the same height. It's just something about that thumbnail.
I think it was the perspective. I think me and Ezra might have been a little closer to camera or something.
It was something weird.
The perspective of it definitely.
You did it dirty.
Once people started saying something, I was like, let me look at this. And I was like, oh man, okay, he does look. He definitely looks smaller in that photo than he actually is.
All right, I've got some interesting. I got some interesting info for you here between the nuke and the heat. They are.
No, I didn't say heat. Oh, I didn't say heat.
We did not say
Avenger
heat.
SS.
Oh, Avenger SS.
Avenger SS.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't have interesting information for you yet. I am sorry. Which
or
would you,
Undertaker
well,
or Raptor.
This could still be interesting while I look up the Avenger SS. What would you think is deeper between the heat and the nuke?
I'd say they're probably very similar.
They're the exact same. Both 1.2 centimeters.
Man,
there you go. I feel like that's probably very
and
similar.
The Avenger SS is the exact same as well, also 1.2 centimeters. So they're all three
there
the
you
same.
Go.
I will say the rim depth to diameter ratio, don't know what that is, but it's 0.1% higher on the nuke. So on the Avenger SS, it's 5.6%. On the Nuke, it's 5.7%.
That goes back to what you're saying. It's like the difference in how deep it is compared to the width of it.
Yeah.
So like the higher the ratio would be, there's a bigger difference between the width and the height. So basically, it's just showing that there's actually not that big of a difference between the two discs.
Yes, I don't really know. I don't remember at this point what.
Look at Raptor though, because that's
the Raptors. Raptor's got to be
100%. It's got to be shallower,
right?
You would think.
Yeah, but I thought I would have thought the Avenger SS was shallower, but it's not.
All right, let's look at. Actually, I'm gonna open the Raptor and I'm gonna open the Captain's Raptor because I'll be curious in both. All right, so the Raptor is 1.1 centimeters, so it's 0.1 centimeter shallower. And the Captain's Raptor is the same shallowness as the Nuke. The Captain's Raptor is
0.1 centimeter.
But the Raptor's 0.1 centimeter difference. So it is technically shallower.
Yeah, that feels
here's the drastic difference is the rim depth to diameter ratio is 5.2% on the Raptor versus the 5.7% on the Nuke. I don't know what that number means. I'm just feeding you stats.
Well, I think it's just like when something's 1 centimeter and something's 1.1 centimeter, that's mass difference. Then if something's 20 centimeters and something's 20.1 centimeters.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Raptor is shallower than the Nuke.
But not by much. Yeah. Okay. That's very interesting.
I still think that would
be a good game for
Trevor's Trivia. Which one's depth?
Is like bust deeper? Out. Which one's deeper, which one's wider?
That would be fascinating.
I feel like you have like these ideas and then like you actually get the numbers and you're like, wow, I was way off.
I'd be bad at that game. I would definitely be bad. But regardless, I still think I would rather have, for disc golf, I'd rather have a bigger wingspan and larger hands.
Yeah.
Personally.
But at what point does your hand become too large?
See, because there is definitely a point of diminishing returns because, like, I can't comfortably power grip Stetcho Embiid. That's funny. See, now he makes you look tiny.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying.
That's so funny.
Oh, there we go.
The only person I have like a picture with is, like...
I look like a normal person.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, I look like just an average-sized human.
Yeah.
Who is that?
In that photo.
Joel Embiid.
He's 7'2"?
So he has you by 8 inches?
Goodness.
Yeah. I mean, he can easily put his chin on
your head?
Easily.
That's funny. Did I not post the picture?
Well, that's how you know if you're really tall. Like, if you're
actually, like, drastically taller than someone.
Yeah.
Tall is Scott Stokely?
Yeah, Scott Stokely seems pretty tall. 6'7". So he's got you by like 3 inches, 3 or 4 inches.
He's like he's my brother's height.
You're 6'4", right?
6'5"? Yeah, I'm almost pretty much. I'm closer to 6'5" probably than 6'4".
So he's got you by a few inches. Dang. So Scott is tall. Because that's the other thing that messed with my head.
Yeah, he's very tall.
Is like disc golf perception.
Him and Big Germ. Big Germ is probably 6'6".
Yeah, Germ you can tell is tall.
He's about an inch taller.
For some reason, Stokely just didn't seem tall. So it threw me off when I like saw him in context with someone else.
What do you mean didn't seem tall?
Like,
he's got super long legs.
Yeah, but something, I don't know what it was. I just was surprised when I heard how tall he was. I remember that.
I could see that being like with Calvin. I could see you being like, oh, I didn't realize Calvin was that tall. Because Calvin's the same height as me.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of tall golfers that are good. I can't find the picture. I only had one picture of me with a tall person, and I looked very tiny in it, and I must have deleted it.
You say that, but then there's a lot of short people that are also good.
Yeah, but I do think they're at a disadvantage.
Well, let's run through. Let's do this real quick. Let's see.
Well, because you got to think.
Let's take a guess. Hold on. Let's take a guess. Each one of us. I'm going to run through the top 25.
Okay.
Do you think? Give your number. We're going to say 6 feet or tall or higher is tall and 6 feet or under is short.
Okay.
How many are you going over 6 feet? What's the number over?
You said for top 25?
Yeah, Saz, you can give me a
Okay.
Go for it.
I'm going 15.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking 15 and 10.
I'm going 15.
15? All right. We're going off of Judah's new list that he just posted 4 hours ago.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Ricky. That's one.
Yeah.
All right.
Paul. No.
No.
Heimberg. That's two.
All right.
Dickerson. No.
No.
Conrad. That's three.
Heck yeah. I'm feeling good right now.
Yeah.
We're Kyle, three out of the top five. Kyle,
yeah.
Four.
Kyle Klein. That's four.
Have you even said Heimberg?
Kevin.
Yeah. That was the second.
Yeah. Okay, Heimberg's okay. One of them.
Okay. We're at four right now.
Kyle Klein. Yeah. We're at fourth. Kyle Klein. Kevin. No.
Yeah.
Adam Hammies, five. Gannon Burr, six.
Oh, yeah.
Eagle, seven.
Oh, my God. We 15 was too low.
Hold on. Joel Freeman, eight. Drew Gibson, no.
Okay.
Nico, no.
No.
Matt Yo, nine. Emerson Keith, no. I don't know if Clemens is... I don't know.
He's close.
Clemens is.
He's close.
If I don't think Clemens is.
Okay, we'll count him as a no, but if we're at 14, I'm arguing.
You're at 9. Ezra, 10. Garrett Gerthy, no. Thomas Gilbert, 11. Aaron Gossage, no.
Oh.
I gave that
Mason
one.
Ford, no.
Yeah.
Bradley Williams, no.
Oh, no.
Alden Harris, no.
No.
Simon Lizotte, yes.
Woo!
12.
Corey Ellis, yes.
Okay.
That's it.
Oh, okay. Well, but 13. we have two questionable. We have Chris Clemens and Aaron Gossage, which would put us at 15.
Yeah.
No, Aaron Gossage is not over 6 feet.
How positive are we? He looks tall.
He's a good friend of mine.
Chris Clemens' height is listed at 5'9". Okay, that's an NBA player. Oh, thank gosh.
Oh.
I was like, there's no way he's shorter than me. Well, that's going to be impossible to find. Because how am I supposed to find
him? You're looking up these things. You're looking up these things like these guys are NBA players.
Chris Clemens, Disc Golf World Tour height, 6'2".
Oh,
not
nice.
Only is he over 6 foot, he's 6'2". All right.
That's 14.
I need to find Aaron Gossage.
14.
I'm texting Aaron. I'm actually going to text Chris.
No, we already got Chris. No need to text him. He might be humble.
No, I don't think that's accurate.
He's listed at 6'2". You can't argue that.
Clemens, people are saying Clemens is yes.
Yeah. Come on, Aaron. Why doesn't the PDJ have height?
They should.
I mean, that's a weird stat.
No,
to have.
Gotta know it. You gotta know these things.
How tall are you?
That's be such a random question out of the blue.
That's
all right. Fine. Hopefully he responds. If he responds,
that's 14.
Yeah, we're at 14 right now. Regardless, pretty good guesses from Silas.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah, but,
that
I mean,
shows.
That's barely half. Barely
yeah,
half
but or, look at the top 10. The top 10 was so tall heavy.
That's true.
Which shows that the best short players in the world can't get up there.
Hmm.
Wow, man.
That's a clear advantage.
Got a point.
That's a clear advantage.
Wow.
It's tough to argue that.
I mean, it's also tough to say 6 feet tall is, but
you set the line.
We'll that,
you set the line. I didn't
no,
set that
I know.
Line. I didn't set it.
I know, but 6 feet tall is like.
Well, Chris Clemens was 6'2", so. And
he
was the debatable one out of all of them, so they all got to be over 6'2".
I know. I just have a hard time believing someone that's 6'1" has a huge advantage over someone that's 5'10".
No, but over 5'8", absolutely.
Well,
because now you're talking wingspan and arm size, I think, are both huge in disc golf.
No, for sure. For sure.
And
for
you
sure.
get both of those with height. Because that's why Paul, although Paul's like 5'10", he has like a 6 foot wingspan. Yeah, that's another thing. It's like some of the short guys that are better have bigger wingspans and they are tall. So it's kind of like they're actually taller than
they are. Do you know what you're talking about right now?
Ape index.
What'd you just say?
The ape index.
What is that?
That's what it's called. It's when your arms are longer than your height. It's like your wingspan compared to your height measurement because it's like how low your hands hang down.
That makes sense.
I'm going to Google it to make
Someone
sure I'm not an idiot.
Someone said the average height is 5'9". Wow.
Yeah, ape index calculator. There's literally calculators online. Ratio of an arm spans to relative to their height. Boom. So, like, if you have a longer arm span than your height,
I'll have Kelsey measure mine tonight.
All right, let's get into some comments from the chat, Silas. About an hour into the show, we'll wrap this up for some, like, 30 minutes of comments. What do you got?
All right. What do we got here? If you have a debate topic, leave it in the
It should have been submitted. We gave him a solid 30 minutes of a pointless debate there.
Everyone was talking about how tall... Gannon's 6'7"? Someone said 6'7".
He's my height, maybe a little taller.
Gannon recently shot up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, he might be taller.
He's only 17.
He could
still hit another growth spurt.
Yeah.
He might be 6'6". He might be 6'6". Might.
That Aaron Gossage text could change everything for me.
Yeah.
If he's ever texting back, he's never texted back. He only responded in the iPhone thingies.
Here we go.
Where you can like you can thumbs up an exclamation point.
That's funny.
Like,
he's never texted back. Well, if he hits you with an exclamation, he's over 6 feet. If he hits you with a thumb down, he's under. That's what we'll just go with that.
Do you guys use those a lot? I've just recently started.
Use them if it's like, if I can respond is like, okay, sounds good or something like that. I'll just hit it with a thumbs up instead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I use them a lot in group text.
All right. Mark wants to know, how important is form in disc golf? For example, would Matty O be better if his form was more, in quotes, normal?
No.
I think that there's certain parts of form that are crucial to being good at disc golf. The issue is I don't think we have the data or the science to know exactly what those are, but I would bet if you were able to cross-reference like 50 players or the top, like we'll go with top 50 players, I would bet there is like a few key things that like 99% of them do. And I'd bet players like Matty O and others that have like Eric Oakley, or I'm just trying to think of other players with like very unique form, I would bet they still hit those things.
Even Aaron Gossage has very unique form.
Ricky has different form backhand than a lot of players.
Calvin doesn't fully extend.
Yeah. So I would bet that there's a few things in there that every one of them's doing. There's a few positions they're getting
Emerson Keith doesn't fully extend either.
Yeah. So
Calvin are very similar.
I'm very curious as like science continues to enter disc golf and like technology enters disc golf, like what those things are.
Someone had a disc at OTB. I wanted to bring this up. Had a disc at OTB with sensors on it.
Oh, was it Tobu?
You would throw, I don't know. Okay. You would throw, I don't even know what that is.
It was an old thing that had sensors on it.
I thought you said
going.
Tobu.
No, Tobu, T-O-B-U. Keep going.
Okay, so it gave you a bunch of numbers, but the only ones that I said like mattered and were interesting is obviously the speed, which I think was pretty close to accurate, because I know if I'm really cranking them, I can give them like up to like 86, 87. And this was after my fourth round, or this was after my final round. And I was getting the top end at like 83. And then, you know, I only threw, I think, three of them. And one of them I didn't really get that much out of. And I was like, that wasn't that good. And it showed up like at 74, 73. Mm. So like it wasn't like I was like, that one didn't feel great. And then it's like 85, you know? So I think it was pretty accurate. But you get how fast, your spin rate.
Yeah.
RPMs. You get your nose angle.
Mm.
And you get your launch angle. Those were the numbers that I thought were very, very interesting. The hyzer angle, I don't know how accurate that was, but those four all felt very accurate, of where if you aimed higher up, your launch angle went up, and then also just the nose angle of...
fascinating.
Yeah, so I thought... Yeah, and I was like, you know, he basically has it too, of where... And this was the part that I was like, I didn't really care about, because he can basically tell the computer what disc you're throwing, and then it generates the flight.
Oh, off that's of those incredible.
Off of those numbers.
That's now, how you get the disc off simulator.
The problem was it was super inaccurate. That was the most inaccurate of all of it because, you know, I would throw a shot that I would throw like any driver that would be like my stock, like 500 foot driver shot. Right. And it would just basically be like, oh, nope. Maybe it was too flippy of a disc. I don't know. But it would just like, it would not fly. It would just like turn over and he'd be like, oh, you got to throw it higher. And then like I would throw a high shot and be like, ah, that didn't feel that good. But then it would like have this crazy like pan stuff. So
it didn't have like the accurateness because that's where disc golf discs are. So like you might have a really overstable force in your bag and in the system, it's a flippy force.
Yeah. And I think there was one number, which was the, I think it was actually the launch number that was screwy. And he said like that, he did say like, that was the number he needed to work with. Because like I would throw a shot and it'd be like, oh, you turfed it. And it's like, no, I definitely didn't turf that.
Yeah.
So he had that number. I think that number was kind of messed up.
That's incredible.
But outside of that, it was actually really, really cool to see. And it made me, because we've talked about disc golf simulators, it made me believe that we're not that far away from it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what's been crazy is like recently I've been talking because with the retail shop being open, there's been a lot more questions thrown at me of like how discs fly and how this disc compares to this disc and yada 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 and what disc is best for this. And it's like questions that I haven't had to answer in a long time, and it's made me like start thinking through. And one thing that I realized I was saying a lot was I was referencing certain discs and being like, yeah, if you really snap it, it'll do this. And then I had someone finally ask me, like, what do you mean if you really snap it? And I'm like, oh, if you, like, no matter, like, how much power, if you get a lot of spin on it, it'll react this way versus if you, like, fan grip and take spin off, it'll react this way. And I didn't realize that that's what's going on in my head sometimes of...
I don't know if fan gripping takes spin off, but continue.
In my form, it definitely does. Because the way I throw when I fan grip. I change a lot when I fan grip. So, but yeah. I do think fan grip takes spin off. But regardless, that's a whole different question. But there are certain things where, like, if a disc, it's really noticeable with MVP when I've thrown that, but it's noticeable with every brand, where, especially on Anheuser, if you get the disc spinning really fast, it wants to hold the Anheuser angle more than if you release it and it doesn't spin as much. It'll want to get to that low-speed stability more. So I feel like that's a whole different avenue of disc golf that I don't even know what's the point of going down, but, like, being able to change up your spin rate with your arm speed to accomplish different flights.
Yeah, and that's actually a good little segue into something that I learned this tournament playing with Mason. We played at like the little dinky, I don't even know, it was I guess a 10 hole course loop. There was no tee pads or anything, but we were just doing kind of like upshot and putting practice. And he was just throwing these discs so straight. And I was like, what the heck? How can he throw these discs so straight? And it's 100% due to the fact of how much spin he puts on it compared to his speed.
Yeah.
So when me and him throw a shot that is going to go 200 feet, for example, his ratio of spin to speed, you know, because we're having to throw it roughly the same kind of he doesn't because his holds straighter longer. But regardless, what I'm trying to say is he can keep the disc so much straighter because he's throwing the shots with so much spin.
Yeah.
He threw an overstable driver, the straightest overstable driver I've ever seen, 150 feet, which in my mind, like I'm thinking like the only way you can throw an overstable driver straight 150 feet is like throwing that thing on like a knife angle, Annie.
Yeah,
right?
And have it flex, kind of.
And have it flex. But no, he just threw it with so much spin that it just stayed straight pretty much and then faded, obviously, at the end. So that was something that I was kind of tweaking a little bit, was working on increasing spin, decreasing spin. And the other thing that I figured out this week, too, was nose angle. So for 99.9% of the time I'm throwing shots, I'm just thinking about keeping the nose flat, like angled down flat.
Yeah.
But I realized for holes on this course, the only way to get the disc to go, the only way to get the disc to go like towards the basket is you actually had to like exaggerate the nose angle down. So on, cause you're releasing on hyzer. So normally I release a, normally I release a hyzer like this, right? But I needed the disc to go, obviously start moving left, but it needed to skip. But when it skipped, it needed to skip straight. And if you release a hyzer like this, it's going to kind of skip and go left.
Yeah.
So I needed to like push down the nose angle more. So that way when it was coming in and skipped, it kind of had a straight skip.
Yeah.
And that just opened the door to possibilities. And this is kind of what you're talking about of where now I'm thinking about so much. Cause I think I do it. I think I do it unintentionally, or like I do it. Cause with ultimate frisbee, obviously you adjust angles all the time, but you don't really think about it. And now I'm starting to actually think about like, okay, how does it get freaky fly when I throw it nose angle down on like a flex line versus nose angle up on a flex line?
Yeah.
And these are now things I'm starting to think about because it definitely does shape shots. And if you have spin control and you have nose angle control like that, of where you can throw a shot a little nose up, you're going to be great. Like hole 11, which is the island hole at OTB, where you're throwing across the water and there's like that palm tree on the left. Like that, for example, is like a perfect like little nose up stall backhand.
Yeah.
Like Raptor.
Yeah.
But if you throw that two nose down, it's going to come in with a lot of heat and skip probably off the island and go OB.
Yeah.
So there's a, that was really fun to kind of see and be like, man, all right, there's still so much I need to learn and so much I need to work on. But
yeah. Cause that was something that like in disc golf form before, not before like this past few weeks, but you can get in ruts where it just feels, it feels basic. Like it feels like there's not that much more to like really discover or learn. But as soon as I started like talking about how much, like, oh, like if you really snap this disc, it does this or whatever. And I wasn't even thinking about what I was saying. I was just saying it. Once someone questioned me on it, it reminded me what I used to work on a ton. And when I was at my best upshots in college, what I was working on a lot was I was throwing it with a Nova at that time, but basically just a neutral flying putter, throwing it nose up with a slow arm speed, but a ton of spin. And what it would do was basically, for like 150 foot shots, it just went dead straight and then just dropped. And what it allowed me to do was run those shots.
No glide.
Well, no, it added glide. The spin added the glide to where like it got to the basket and it would like stall to the basket and you could like get it there basket height, but it wasn't going past. So it allowed me to like
dropped out of the sky. It had no glide.
Well, it had no glide at the end when it lost speed, but it still had, when it lost speed, it still had spin. So it wasn't hyzering. I don't know. It was like you're throwing like a little stall shot to the basket. And like that's something I've completely lost in the last few years. But like that's something I used to do.
Get it back.
I got to get it back.
Get it back, man.
I got to get it back. Because that was so much fun. Because if I was like 100 feet out dead straight, I wasn't thinking get this close. I was thinking just try to throw it in. And my body was naturally, how I tried to throw it in was this little floaty stall shot that would like, worst case scenario, I'm 20 feet past. And like that was way more fun. I didn't even think about it until people were asking me how discs flew, and I started using terms that I was like, what does that actually mean? What am I talking about? And I was like, oh, maybe I do know what I'm talking about. All right, here we go. Disc golf. What else we got, Silas? We kind of went on a rabbit trail there.
Yeah.
We need to have a theme song for when you're looking through the chat.
I know. I get Trevor's theme song stuck in my head.
Oh, we can take a moment here. Actually, I don't know if I want to spoil it. No.
Have you done the interview yet?
I'll spoil it. Why not? Unless something crazy happens, Trevor will have Bert on his show Thursday. The interview is tomorrow at 2 p.m. Trevor's been prepping all day. He fired a few questions at me, asking me if they were good questions. I think it's going to be a great mix of getting... Obviously, getting Bert's personality through isn't going to be hard, but hopefully getting him to tell some pretty funny disc golf stories and at least get him get him rolling with some disc golf, because that's what Trevor's main focus is, talking through disc golf stuff with him, obviously. But it's going to be a big interview.
Biggest interview, right?
Yeah, it's going to be big time interview. So
you got to go bigger. Who does he want next? You got to go bigger.
I don't know.
You got to keep going up.
Got to keep going up. I don't know. Trevor was funny because this is the first time he's reached out to like schedule an interview and is talking with an assistant versus the actual person. And he was like, "This is so nerdy." He texted me Sunday night and he's like, "I don't know what to do, man. I'm talking with his assistant and like she already wants the Zoom link, but I use Riverside FM to record these things." And I was like, "Well, just get her a Zoom link." He's like, "I don't know how to get a Zoom link." I was like, "Google it and get her a Zoom link, Trevor. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is your time." So, well, it'll all be figured out. I mean, using Zoom is very easy. He was just stressing, but it was pretty funny. He's like, I've never talked to an assistant before.
My goal is to try to find more and more people to, like, where Trevor has to interview them. Like,
Bill
can't
Nye.
Just be like, oh,
there
no.
we go. He's got to get Bill Nye next.
No.
That's the next.
Bill Nye, the disc golf guy.
No. Bill. No, that's Bill. Easy. That's. First off, that's easy to do.
Too low hanging fruit. No. Okay.
Well, no, it's just like he's all into ultimate. He's already into that. We
so you want
to get
people that
like
aren't into disc golf at all. What you're talking?
Like Disclosure.
Oh, we want
like Big Cat.
We want Big Cat would be that'd be huge.
Big Cat would be good. But like Disclosure, Bryce, they're big.
DeChambeau. Someone spotted him on a disc golf course in Georgia once. They took a selfie with him.
Oh, he was.
Yeah. So, I mean, Bryson sneaky plays. We get DeChambeau on there.
He's injured right now, so he's not going to be.
That's great timing.
I think I actually might bounce into the Charles Schwab this weekend.
Oh, yeah?
All right, Clemens set 6-2.
Oh,
we knew Clemens was 6-2. That was on World. That was on the.
No, we didn't. Wait, we didn't know for sure.
The other one was Gossage.
We need Gossage. We need Gossage. Has he emphasized
Gossage
the message yet?
No, he's probably in some national park hiking. He's probably hiking in, or biking.
You don't do that unless you're at least 6 feet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We got nothing silent.
Strictly tall people activities.
His bike seat didn't look that high.
Maybe his wheels are big.
Maybe he's got a dropper seat post. You know,
no one knows what that is.
What the heck is that?
Yeah, no one knows where that is.
Dropper seat post.
That's the seat.
That's you just made
height.
Something.
Oh,
up.
The seat goes with you.
No, the seat changes height. Yeah, it's on like mountain.
Isn't
that
bikes. Every bike.
No,
that's every
no.
bike.
It has, like,
it's hydraulic.
Oh,
you,
it's like suspension.
You press a button and you stand up, and it'll raise automatic. It's like a wheelie chair. You know, it's like a desk chair, but it's like on your bike.
So like this.
Yes.
Wow, I've never seen
that. You can do that on a bike.
I've never seen that.
It's called dropper seat
I've
post.
Never seen
dropper
that.
Seat post. Yeah. You learn something new every day.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
What we got, Silas? What's coming in?
Ice cream versus frozen yogurt.
Ice cream.
Is there any disc golf stuff? Nothing really happened. No one wants to hear opinions on anything.
Brody.
I'm trying to think what.
Do you think that the Disc Golf Pro Tour will ever come to Canada?
Ooh, Canada.
Matthew wants to know.
Right now, I don't see there to be a reason to do that, but in the future, for sure. I mean, again, a lot of these events only, should be only happening if they feel like they are successful in the sense of making money. So if some place like Toronto or some place like Vancouver hold a site, and they can get a lot of people either to the venue, or they can get a lot of sponsorship money backing the venue. Then, 100%. But like as a disc golf pro tour goes, you know, they need to be looking at these things as like, are we making money? You know, can we make money going to these places? And if the answer is yes, you should keep going back there. If the answer is no, then I don't think you're going back.
There you have it.
There we have it. Roger says, what do you think about the Disc Golf Network and Jomez collab?
What was that?
They did a collab, or should they do a collab?
I think he's saying like the graphics, follow flights, and shared footage.
Oh, like should they collab?
Yeah, I guess that's what I guess he's asking that.
I don't think they collabed. I mean,
it's tough to do that stuff live, though. Like, well, that no, stuff I think, takes those people so long.
I think it would be more so... I do think that the ideas Jomez has implemented on, like, flyovers and stuff previously, I don't know if they still do this, but, like, where the they have, like, during the flyover, the follow flight that shows you the line to the landing zone, that would be great to have live. But they highlight
certain stuff too.
Yeah, like that stuff would be great to have live, like pre-prepared graphics of like, you know, hey,
yes,
this hole on this course is hard to follow. Let's make sure every round when we get to this hole, we highlight it with this graphics package to show here's the landing zone, here's the danger, here's what you miss, here's the green type thing. And just as the drone's flying over and the commentators know it and do it, I mean, that would be huge. But with that being said, you don't like it. Any like you can hire someone to make those graphics,
right?
So
I got that.
How much coverage did you guys end up watching?
I got to watch like a round and a half.
I didn't watch a whole lot, maybe a round.
It was late here, okay. It didn't start till like a little after six.
I did see something was they were showing people just playing cards on the backup.
Yeah, that's happened before.
They love that. Why? They love that.
Why?
Well, their argument is
they don't have
any
cameras of anything else.
Yeah, their argument is they can't send cameras.
Talk about something else.
Well, I think you throw it to the booth.
And when you talk about something, put the camera of them in the booth talking.
Yeah, I think you throw it to the booth, and then you let the chase card camera get the hole ahead, the lead card camera get the hole you're backed up on, and then once they're in position, you just cut to the chase card the chase card camera crew and the lead card camera crew, and you got two holes of golf that people are cycling through while you're waiting for the backup to clear. There you go.
You got to show just disc golf. You can't show people playing cards.
Have some highlight packages ready. That's a good time to go to commercial. Go to commercial while you get everything figured out. Come back to a highlight package of here's what Simon's done so far through the first however many holes.
I would much rather watch random disc golf shots from people that are in 10th or 12th or 15th than the leaders playing cards.
Yeah.
But that's something I saw. I don't know.
It is what it is. There was a lot of, Robbie C I saw was in the chat and said something about along the lines of, has Elaine King's commentary career tainted her disc golf legacy? Which I thought was a pretty fascinating topic. Mainly,
is it bad?
No, just like she's been very heavily criticized, mainly because of what happened with the major, where
just the Kristen Tatar thing.
Yeah, and so since then she's been under a microscope, so her commentary and stuff's under a lot of scrutiny, more so than it was prior. And then the Pro Tour came out with a statement of like, basically standing behind Elaine and she's going to finish out the season. But he does bring a good point. Like a lot of like the modern day players, because even for me, I've seen Elaine King dominate North Carolina and like MA1. I vividly remember a tournament, like tournaments where I showed up and she was playing MA1 and like she cleaned house. So that's the Elaine King I knew. But prior to that, she had a dominant GOAT level status FPO career with 5 world titles and stuff. And the new generation of disc golfers doesn't see her as a player. They see her as a commentator. And so with some of the controversy that's went on with the like Kristen Tatar things and stuff like that, I could see where you could argue that it has. I mean, good news for her. She's already a Hall of Fame player, already has 5 world titles. Like you can only tarnish that accolade so much.
Yeah, but the question is like, let's just say, you know, I think we could all assume that being a successful commentator for the next 5-10 years, there's probably more money in that than how much money she won winning tournaments however many years ago.
Yeah.
So
there's a bigger chance to make a name for herself as a commentator right now than as a player however many years ago, because there's so many more eyeballs in the sport right now. So more people will know her name, good or bad, from commentary right now than from playing. So there is definitely a chance.
That's probably like something with, like you can say about Nate Perkins or Brian Earhart or any of these guys. You know, if you ask someone like, hey, do you know who this is? They probably are going to say, I would assume the majority of people are probably going to say like, oh yeah, the commentator or the on-field reporter.
Yeah. And then Nate Goss. Be like, oh Nate yeah, Goss that, is another one.
Nate Doss would be a good one too. It'd be very interesting to, you know, go out to just, you know, man on the street kind of thing at a disc golf course and ask people. And I would say, like you said, the old people, not old people, but like the people that have been playing disc golf for years, they probably are like, oh yeah, Nate Doss, he's won a lot of world championships. But the newer players probably only know Nate Doss from commentating.
Yeah, they'd probably say he's a commentator. I think they say he's won a few world titles or something. Versus other people would say he's a world champion who's now a commentator.
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do, too, with just, like, the coverage now is getting more. There's way more cameras, way more media going on now than there was back then.
Yeah.
So it's harder to kind of re-show and keep all that history going.
Yeah.
Here's a kind of example that Chris with the Super Chat said. He said, does it hurt a Hall of Fame basketball player by being a bad GM? Like, that kind of...
That's a little tough because a GM's so behind the scenes. You have to be like really into basketball,
yeah,
to see it.
Yeah,
or you gotta really screw
up. I mean, like for Steve Nash, for instance, as a head coach, I think is a little bit more like in front of the scene. Like I couldn't name a GM.
Yeah, let's say coach.
But
Steve Nash, Hall of Fame basketball player, and
Jason
he's
Kidd,
now a coach.
Steve Kerr.
Does that tarnish his basketball if they suck?
The thing with the NBA though is if they suck, they're not going to have a long enough coaching career to tarnish their name.
Because
Steve Kerr is going to be known as the Golden State Warriors coach more than he is a Bulls basketball player.
Tom Brady is another good example, right? Like Tom Brady is going to get in the booth for 10 years. Now, I don't think anyone's assuming he's going to be bad. I feel like he's probably going to be very, very good. But if he was bad, let's just say he ends up being bad and people don't like him, you're going to have a lot of people being like, oh, Tom Brady, yeah, he was a good quarterback, but he was a terrible comment. Like, he sucked at commentating. And that'll just be something that people will always bring.
Yeah, versus Tony Romo.
Even Tony Romo, some people are anti-Tony Romo now.
Sure.
Like if you stay in the limelight enough time commentating, you can't win.
But I'm saying Tony Romo turned a lot of hearts.
With Tom he did, but now I think people are now turning on him.
Sure. Maybe now, yeah. I haven't paid close enough attention, but I vividly remember a lot of people hated Tony Romo as a quarterback, mainly just because I think Dallas just didn't do anything. So Cowboys fans didn't like him, and then everyone hated him
because
he's Cowboys.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say Cowboys are one of those teams that you know, you either a fan of or you hate. It's not like the Browns where there's very few people that hate the Browns.
Yeah. And, but then when he got into the booth, a lot of people's opinion changed. I think when Tom got to Tampa Tom, a lot of people's opinion changed. Heck, TikTok Tom has changed a lot of opinions. Have you seen him on TikTok? This man's wild.
He's on TikTok?
Yeah. It's hilarious.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And it's not even like it's not even like people are editing clips together. Like, he is genuinely making TikToks.
Good for you, Tom.
He initially started with just like someone making his TikToks for him kind of thing, and they were all like very cool. But now he's like literally a TikToker. Like he's doing trends that like people at home do as well.
It's very funny.
Isn't he like
I
really
watched the one
now?
Where
he's like 40.
Yeah, he's like 40 plus. He's still a disgusting quarterback though.
Yeah. Tampa Tom. TikTok Tom.
Tampa Tom. All right. We got one from Duval Disc Golf. What do you think the Pro Tour has to do to get outside sponsors to sponsor tournaments like OTB Open, sponsored by Pepsi, for example? What do you think? Like, the sport just has to get bigger? Like, bigger, more money in the sport? What?
Well, I mean, that is the more money. More eyeballs is the biggest
thing.
More
eyeballs.
I think that's the big thing. But, I mean, what, like, steps you take to get there? I mean, in my opinion, it's a lot of small steps that get you there. It's not just, like, we need this one magical thing and it gets there. I will say it's a little bit of a... I guess trickle effect might be the right word, where when one brand jumps in and continues, then you'll start to see more. But one brand is going to have to take the risk and it's going to have to pay off. So I think, I don't know, the big thing is just more eyeballs. And I think a really big thing is more people, more fans on the ground. Like, obviously, like, there's a lot of fans in disc golf that are at tournaments, sure. But, like,
it looks way better.
Once there's 5,000 people at, like, every single pro tour, it looks better. And also the on-course integrations, the on-course advertisement becomes a lot more valuable. Because, like, right now, as a disc golf brand, if you pay for an on-course advertisement and it happens to not get shown on the coverage, you're flipping a coin if you're getting seen by 500 people or 1,000 people or something. Whereas if you know, even if I don't get shown on the coverage, there's going to be 7,000 people, maybe 10,000 people throughout the course of the weekend that are walking by my sign. Even if I don't get shown on the coverage, that's worth something. And, you know, if it's Pepsi or something, you know, hey, every pro tour, that's the only beverage that's there now. And there's X amount of people that are coming through. That's worth something. So I think the biggest thing is just eyeballs and then being intentional, putting pro tours in disc golf hotbeds to make sure that, like, there's going to be a ton of people. Like, Charlotte, USDGC, there's always going to be a big crowd there.
What is preventing larger amounts of people from coming out to these events? Is it, like, parking?
Small towns. We don't play in any big cities.
Yeah.
So we just need courses in big cities.
We were talking about this. We, like, literally think of one tournament that is played in a big city.
It's literally Charlotte. That's it.
So we have no. Well, Vegas, consider Vegas.
Vegas is still outside, isn't it? Or is it close enough?
It's close enough.
Okay,
I mean, you're not going to be like in downtown Vegas.
Yeah.
And then after that, you've got like Waco, no. Belton, no. Tyler, Texas, no. Jonesboro, no. Emporia, no. Santa Cruz, not really. Stockton, not really. Portland was big last year. Like, yeah, there was a lot of people that came there. But if you start, like, Idlewild is in, where's that?
That's Cincinnati. But
it's way outside.
Is it outside? It's like 20 minutes from the airport. I don't know how far that is from the. I don't know how far that is from.
The are you city. Sure? I feel.
Yeah, because like, we stay at the airport. That's the hotel I always stay at. It's literally connected at the airport.
Really?
You literally stayed there last
year. In Burlington, Kentucky. It's pretty far outside.
Someone said there's a Silver Series in Jacksonville, Florida this year.
How far is it from?
Oh, wait. Hold on. It's pretty far outside the city. But that's maybe not that. That's one that probably is like close enough. But it's one of those things where it is interesting of where, you know, I think obviously being in a city.
It's 22 minutes from Cincinnati, from the city.
Downtown?
Yeah, I routed from Cincinnati to.
That's. I think anything inside of like 45 minutes is not bad.
Yeah.
Because that means if you live on the other side of the city, you still can.
You
come.
Still can get there.
But,
yeah,
but I think honestly, that's one thing of where it's the pool of people willing to come when you go to smaller cities is going to be much smaller.
Yeah.
Than if you go to a larger city and you can start. Cause I think that's something too, that will be very interesting to see what the Disc Golf Pro Tour does in the future is like how much promotion they put into like the radio, how much promotion do they put into like events leading up to the actual tournament to where you get people excited and in word on the street kind of talking.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I don't know if that's because
like billboards
as far as
or something.
Well, I don't know about billboards, but
just like marketing,
like just have
in general.
Marketing on the grounds at there, you know, and I think that's something that is definitely long-term. I don't think it makes sense probably to do that right now, but, you definitely hear, like, when you listen to local radio and stuff, when there's an event coming to town, you oftentimes hear that on the radio. You see it in the newspapers. And I think Emporia is one where the event is so massive to the city already that, you know, the whole city's buzzing about that event, you know. And that's also another event that's very... It would be interesting to see how many people would show up to that event if there wasn't a big AM tournament.
Yeah, no, that would be very interesting. I think it would also be interesting to run an experiment of the same amount of local marketing that goes on in Emporia for DDO if you put that into, I mean, Cincinnati for Idlewild.
Yeah, what does happens? It do?
Yeah, like yeah, how much the, of a direct effect, yeah, is that having? Like, because obviously, if you get a certain percentage of the Emporia population out, that's not drastic. You know, let's say that, but it might make the disc golf tournament there feel bigger. But then you get that same percentage or close to the same percentage of a Cincinnati population out, you might not be able to hold them. I guess that's the other thing too, is like a lot of these tournaments are selling out, but they're selling out like 500 spots.
Because of what?
I was looking at
that's a great question, Silas. I was looking
at the Charles Schwab tournament that's happening this weekend here in the DFW area, and I just wanted to see, like, you know, it's a good tournament. It's not a massive tournament, it's a good tournament. And I just looked up like the attendance, and the only thing I saw was from like 2020 that they're limiting the amount of spectators per day because of COVID to 15,000.
Holy cow.
So I don't know what that means. I don't know how many people are actually going to be there this year or whatever, but the fact that they're limiting it to 15,000 only, that makes me believe there's more than 15,000 that normally show up.
Yeah.
And that's massive. I would love to get numbers from the Disc Golf Pro Tour and how many people have gone to these events, because,
well, you can see the OTB tickets that are selling out.
How many tickets sold? You can see how many tickets sold for OTB?
Maybe not. I mean, I think OTB might have went through Eventbrite, which you can't. But the ones that are going through Disc Golf Scene, you can. And like that's how we saw there's only a few hundred at Champions Cup.
Oh, interesting. I will say that was we were on hole 17 and the leaders were probably on hole 11, I would say, the island hole at the time. And it was probably one of the loudest roars I've heard from like across the course, right? Yeah. Like we were pretty far away from that hole and the roar was pretty loud. So that's always fun and cool to hear.
Yeah, you can't see numbers for OTB online. You can't see how many.
So I don't know how big the crowd was, but
The cheapest ticket was $18, and that was for the concert. The cheapest general admission ticket was $20, I believe.
Oh,
okay.
That's really. I feel like that. I mean, I've never been a spectator, but I feel like that's super cheap.
This for, felt that's like for a single real, day general admission.
Oh,
this for felt one like day. A real.
Oh, okay. That was the cheapest day. So that was Friday general admission. It was like $30 final day general admission.
Oh, well.
But this felt like a real event, Silas. Like it felt like a real event.
That's good. That's good to hear that they're, you know, putting that time and effort into making it great.
Like, yeah, like when you're parking, when you park,
yeah,
there's like there's ropes off area so you know where to park, and then they have like fencing, like actual like what you would see at a concert.
Yeah.
To walk into the venue. So it's just like already right off the bat, you feel like, oh, okay, like I'm actually at an event. I'm just not walking through a field.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think all that's, I don't know if we have any people watching that went to the event. I would love to hear what they thought of it. If anyone that's watching or listening after the fact, you know, post in the comments on the YouTube, what your thoughts were on going to the event, because again, I think this one, and again, Champions Cup was really good, Jonesboro was really good, so it feels like we're getting better and better and better, which is awesome. But I would love to hear from people that actually went to the event and from their perspective what they thought about it.
Yeah, Portland opened. There's one thing sold out. It doesn't say how many are available of anything, but the 4-day VIP pass with merch is sold out, which was $150.
Well, I wonder how many of those were.
I don't know. And then the 4-day VIP pass without merch is still available. The 4-day general admission pass, and then all the individual day VIP and general admission pass.
How much is that for a 4-day?
4-day general admission or 4-day? 4-day VIP is $100. 4-day general admission is $40.
Okay.
So it's $10 a day general admission for 4-day.
Yeah.
Or you can pay $15 a day, $20 for the final day if you just pay one day.
That's not bad. I don't.
$10 a day, I don't think it's bad at all.
No, I have no complaints.
No, that's, in my opinion, that's that's cheap.
Yeah, I think $10 a day is great.
What is VIP that's get you?
I think you get inside the ropes.
General admission gets you certain general admission viewing areas. You don't follow the cards.
Yeah,
VIP, okay. You get to follow the cards when available.
Gotcha.
Essentially.
Okay.
So
that's cool.
If most people want VIP.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a good little group on Sunday. We had a little good group because it was me, Kevin Jones, and Garrett Gerthy. So we had a solid and obviously we're teeing off pretty early, so people that watched FPO, for example, when that was over, they could join and watch us and then kind of peel off before the
league
card started.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think that's also a really cool part too with going to these events as well. There are more and more Aaron Gossage, for example, he's starting to make a name for himself, right?
Yeah.
And there could very well be some people that are huge Aaron Gossage fans in a couple months or right now.
Yeah.
And when they go to an event, they want to watch him play and he might be in 20th place or 25th place and you would never see him on coverage the final day, but he might be playing with Jeremy Colling and a Austin Turner or whoever. And you're like, oh wow, that's a sick card. Like I want to go watch them. And you can do that. So I think live, it's going to get better and better, obviously, as
more and more people make names.
Yeah, but I think also, too, we need more cut cameras. I'm just going to keep harping on that. Now, obviously, there is probably some sort of formula of, how much money they're making versus how many cameras they're showing, right? Because it is very expensive to get more and more of those live units. But I think as you get more and more cameras and show more and more players and get more and more people involved in all this, I think it makes the broadcast way better. And then also you're just building out the tour, right? You're getting more people coverage to where people are now interested in those people.
Yeah. Well, sweet. I think that about wraps up the show. You'll be heading to Portland next, correct? Heading out next week.
We've got brand new course for Portland on the golf course, brand new, and then Blue Lake, which was Worlds 2016?
14.
15? 14?
Yeah, 14. 15 was 15 was Pittsburgh, 16 was Emporia, 17 Georgia, 18 back up north somewhere. It was 14. It was where they went to the playoff. Okay. Ricky threw it into the tree. Paul got up and down, won his third in a row.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what they did there because I remember I did play it when I was out there in Portland last year.
Yeah.
Because the golf course, I got there early and the golf course wasn't actually ready for us to practice. So everyone's like, people either went up and played the Beaver State Fling course, what is that one called?
Milo MacGyver.
Yeah, people played that one or people were going to this Blue Lake one. And I remember I played it really fun, really awesome. It'll be interesting to see kind of how much OB they put down to actually make it challenging.
Yeah.
So Portland, like I said, that was a big one last year. I remember that was one of the only tournaments that I went to where you would be on the driving range warming up and there was 20, 30 people watching.
Wow. Yeah, it's awesome.
Most of the time you're going on the driving range, no one's really paying attention. But there are so many people there that they were just everywhere. So that one should be a fun one.
Sweet. Well, looking forward to it. Tournaments with a lot of fans always makes the live coverage and everything way more electric and way more exciting. And, we'll be back here again next week. We'll probably go an hour later because you'll be back on the West Coast. So we'll probably go back to the 8 p.m. Eastern time for that. But we'll post all about it as we get closer and closer. And thank you all so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great week. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday. Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.